I've written a column for the latest issues, etc. journal titled Closed Communion, Biblical, Historical, Lutheran, and Loving. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Nancy Almodovar writes about her journey from the profound doubt produced by her former Calvinist beliefs to the absolute certainty of Lutheran theology. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
The great thing about being tolerant is that you can do that from your couch. You know, you can just lay there and do nothing, and you're successfully tolerating everything in the world. It doesn't really require anything of you.
It's important to understand that what begins as discrimination becomes secularization. You can't have a system where you legally privilege one religion without causing blowback.
The problem is if you go into marriage with this false ideal of self-actualization, then if you don't get that self-actualization, you've got your built-in excuse to quit.
The answer to despair is God's word, living, mighty, efficacious. The answer to despair is our baptism. The answer to despair is the Holy Supper.
College students graduating during COVID-19, love Issues, etc.
Vaccines are a good thing. The ability to vaccinate a population against all kinds of diseases, that ability has literally changed the world. And for many people, many populations, it has meant the difference between life and even an early death. It's part of our life to be vaccinated. Some people object to it for other reasons. But what if some vaccines are produced from cell lines taken originally from aborted fetuses? Well, it's not a what if, it is a fact. There are some. What do Christians do about this, especially in the face of their conscience regarding vaccinations being robbed of its legal protections in many states? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Friday afternoon, May the 15th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll be talking with Dr. Gifford Grobien about vaccines, abortion, and Christian consciences. Our series on the Lutheran Confessions will continue with Pastor Paul McCain of Concordia Publishing House. We'll be in the Solid Declaration of the Formula of Concord, talking about the Holy Supper, Part 2, focusing on the words of institution. Then, since it's Friday, we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We'll play 4 soundbites for you, and after we've played them for you, you vote by giving us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE, sending us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or you can vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to talk about vaccines, abortion, and the Christian conscience, Dr. Gifford Grobien. He's Associate Professor of Systematic Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, As Long as Vaccines Are Tied to Abortion, Christians Need Exceptions. Dr. Grobien, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. It's my pleasure to be with you.
What are religious exceptions to vaccination mandates?
So a religious exemption, or in some states they're called philosophical exemptions or combined in some way, but it's essentially where traditionally states have allowed members to opt out of taking vaccines if they have a religious or philosophical reason, a question of conscience. There may be other reasons behind it. Obviously, the focus of my article had to do with the use of aborted fetal tissue that's used to develop the cell lines that are used in vaccines.
So tell us about two cell lines in particular named WI-38 and MRC-5 that are used to manufacture vaccines in the U.S.
Right, so these are the two cell lines that are used for some vaccines in the U.S., and I want to iterate, and we'll probably get to this later in the interview, but I want to iterate that they're not used for every vaccine. So I'm not talking about every vaccine, but these are used specifically for some vaccines. And WI-38 is the name of one strain, as you mentioned, and that comes from an abortion from 1962 from about a three-month gestation little girl fetus from her lung tissue. And the MRC5 comes from a boy, about a 14-week gestational aged boy, also from lung tissue. They're designated the WI-38. That just means it was associated with the Wistar Institute, where the researchers were working that developed that cell line. And MRC has to do with the Medical Research Council. It's a UK research organization where the cell line was developed as well.
Why do researchers use fetal tissue to develop these cell lines?
Well, usually what's the argument given is that because it's human cells, they grow better, the viruses grow better in them than they would in animal cells. Because we're trying to deal with viruses that attack humans, that we want to develop the antigens in cells that are human cells, and so they'll grow more effectively. The antigens will be more effective than they would in animal cells. And also, it's said that they can be produced more quickly. Now, both of these arguments, I have no reason to doubt them in a sense, but the point is that these still aren't the only ways that these vaccines can be developed. And in fact, vaccines can be developed, antigens can be developed in other cells relatively quickly and effectively. As I said, not every vaccine is made from fetal cell lines, and these other vaccines are effective, you know, just as effective as the ones that are. And so they can be made. In fact, flu vaccines typically are made, the antigens are grown in animal cell lines, or most commonly, actually, chicken eggs. Now, it is true that chicken eggs take much longer to develop the number of antigens that are needed. But in general, there are ways, in other words, that these antigens can be developed effectively without using the fetal cell lines. And that's, I think, an important point to note.
There are several arguments that are used in favor of vaccines that are produced from these cell lines, where they are produced from fetal tissue. The first one of which is that the fetuses were not aborted in order to procure these cell lines in order to make the vaccines. How do you respond to that particular argument?
Sure. And, you know, I think when we think about that question, we have to, of course, ask, well, who all is actually involved in the abortion? And when we say the purpose of the abortion was not to develop vaccines, okay, I mean, I think it's fair to say that that's true with respect to the mothers who aborted the children. But there are also researchers and the abortionists themselves who are involved in the abortion. And that's, I think, where the question of purpose comes in. Researchers, at least going back to Leonard Hayflick, who developed the WI-38 strain back in the 1960s, at least going back that far and perhaps before that, have recognized that fetal cell lines could potentially be great sources for growing vaccine antigens. And so they looked for fetal tissue to make these cell lines. Hayflick had business connections with abortion providers, and the abortion providers knew that they should be looking out for tissue that they could provide to Leonard Hayflick. So that's, I think, the thing to keep in mind, is that even if the mother isn't going in to have an abortion to help create a vaccine, there are others that are involved in procuring the abortion, in actually committing the abortion, and then using that tissue later. And so there is an element of purpose that's involved here that I think we have to recognize and be aware of.
It's also argued that these existing cell lines do not require ongoing abortions in order to maintain them. And that's usually put forward as kind of an argument in favor of using them for vaccines. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's true. So far, those are the only two fetal cell lines in the United States that are used to make vaccines. But I think the other point then that we have to realize is that when cell strains are used for this, and when there is a general kind of public consensus for their use in this way, this gives a sort of implicit or tacit approval that this could be done in the future. There have, in fact, been researchers who have developed cell strains from aborted fetal tissue for the purpose of using them to develop vaccines, or in the hopes that they can be used for developing vaccines. It's just that they haven't yet actually been used for that. And there are about three or four other cell strains that have been developed over the years for the use of vaccines. Also, there is a limit to how many cells can be actually produced and generated from these cell lines. Now, admittedly, the limit is very large, but eventually, when these cell lines, when WI38 and MRC5 reach their end, reach their limit of producing any more cells, then if there's this continued acceptance for using aborted fetal cell lines to make vaccines, then we will see new cell lines from aborted fetal tissue used to make vaccines. So that's, I think, part of the thing to keep in mind, is that even if right now this isn't happening in a technical sense, there's a general acceptance that this is going to happen and going to be okay.
Many argue that the overall benefit to public health is a worthy reason to continue manufacturing these vaccines from these fetal cell lines. How would you answer that argument?
Well, sure, and there's a couple things, I think, to keep in mind here, too. I mean, again, I think it's not an either-or, right? And that's, I think, the point I was trying to make earlier, is that there are other ways to grow the antigens to keep the virus alive in other types of cells. Animal cells can be used, even chicken eggs and other types of sources like that. So it's not an either-or, right? We can still have the public health benefits of vaccines without using fetal tissue and the fetal cell lines that come from them. Also, I think I want to emphasize that my point in the article is to emphasize that we need to maintain the religious exemption. That is to say, we need to protect individual consciences. I'm not necessarily coming out and saying this is what everybody needs to do, right? I'm not saying you can't use these vaccines that have fetal cell lines. That's not even really my place to do that. I want to raise awareness that this is happening and also make the argument that, yeah, we need to allow Christians not only to be aware of the fetal cell lines that are being used for this, but then to make their own decisions. I think the biggest concern is that you have states that are actually removing the religious and philosophical exemption so that this isn't even an option anymore.
Dr. Gifford Grobien is our guest. We're talking with him about vaccines, abortion, and the Christian conscience. When we come back, some pro-life leaders have at least reportedly expressed their approval of these vaccines in certain circumstances. We'll find out what that means next. I've written a column for the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Closed Communion, Biblical, Historical, Lutheran, and Loving. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Nancy Almodovar writes about her journey from the profound doubt produced by her former Calvinist beliefs to the absolute certainty of Lutheran theology. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive word and sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide word and sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. classicalspecialneeds.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Gifford Grobeen is our guest. We're talking about vaccines, abortion, and Christian consciences. He's Associate Professor of Systematic Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, As Long as Vaccines Are Tied to Abortion, Christians Need Exemptions. Dr. Grobeen, it is being reported that some pro-life leaders, including the Vatican, have expressed their approval of using these vaccines, the ones produced with fetal cell lines, in cases where there is no alternative. Tell us about that.
Yeah, now, I mean, technically that is true. The Vatican, I think most prominently and most publicly, and other Christian leaders have technically said, and the language that the Vatican uses is that if there's a proportionate reason, then we can use these vaccines. And we need to recognize at the same time that, for example, rubella in particular can have a horrific effect on an unborn baby. So for example, if a mother carrying a child, you know, she's pregnant, and if the mother gets rubella, the rubella probably isn't going to bother the mother too much. It's a mild disease for somebody who's already born, but it can be devastating to her unborn baby. It can cause miscarriages, of course, which is terrible, but also it can cause severe birth defects. And so the Vatican has said, look, if there are really no other options and you find yourself to be in a high-risk kind of situation, then yeah, I mean, obviously we want to protect the life and health of the baby that you're carrying. What I would say is, what I'm pushing for here in this article is not to make a generic policy. I'm not saying never use these vaccines. I'm not saying don't use them. I'm saying let's allow Christians to make a fully informed decision, to be aware of what's happening, and to make that choice. And I think a key thing that religious leaders have said in their technical and occasional approval of this is not that we should just sort of allow kind of the widespread use of these things, but we should sort of recognize if we're in a high-risk population, then yeah, it might be okay. But at the same time, we need to be asking for alternatives. We need to be pressing for alternatives, and we need to be kind of pushing for that kind of thing so that we don't have to use vaccines anymore that are made from fetal cell lines.
The Trump administration recently ended government funding for most fetal tissue research, and that's good. Does that affect the legality of fetal tissue research?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is that it doesn't affect the legality of it. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but in what I read, especially in researching for this article, all this means is that the federal government won't provide funding for this research, but it still allows this research. So fetal tissue can still be procured from abortions and used for continued research, not only to produce vaccines, but and it actually is more often the case, more often now, fetal tissue is used for other kinds of research projects. So yeah, well, it's good that the government isn't funding these things. It hasn't affected the legality of that research.
As you have said here several times, firm Christian voices objecting to these vaccines and demanding alternatives are necessary. Why is that?
Well, again, I think it's not an either-or, right? It's not like we're saying, well, we're just not going to vaccinate against rubella, right? And it's not like we're saying, well, I guess we're not going to vaccinate against chickenpox. We're operating in a very practical and realistic possibility here that other alternatives can be manufactured. I mean, Japan uses a rubella vaccine that does not use fetal cell tissue and cell lines. So these things can be done, and in fact are being done in other parts of the world. So the more that Christians are aware of this, the more that there can be kind of a public, perhaps unified or corporate voice for these kinds of things, then the possibility of change really is there, and it exists.
How can we argue for maintaining religious exemptions, especially so many of them being shut down, when it comes to vaccinations produced from aborted fetuses?
Well, since we're talking about kind of a political issue, I mean, we can argue for it in the general sense that we might argue for any political issue, you know, communicating with our legislators, with our state governments. It's the state level where these kinds of decisions are made. But I think, you know, there are other ways as well. We can ask our providers, we can ask our doctors and other providers for alternatives. Say, now, what kind of cell lines are being used here? Well, I don't want to use these cell lines. Can we have alternatives? And even if alternatives don't exist right now at available, the more of those kinds of voices that come out, the more that creates a public opinion. We can communicate with manufacturers, pharmaceutical companies that create these vaccines. And really, I would say that those who have means to do so in the Christian community, those who perhaps have money that can be used for research and development, those Christians who have been blessed with those kinds of means and resources can contribute to this kind of research. Those who are involved in scientific research in these areas can act on these kinds of things. And finally, religious leaders and religious organizations, religious church bodies can make statements, can make this a public issue. And especially if church bodies work together, right, I think governments can see that there is a unified voice on this. So, you know, it'd be great, for example, if Synod and Convention passed a kind of statement that made people aware of this and pushed for at least the allowance of religious exemptions. But beyond just what's going on in the Synod, you know, our leaders can work with other church bodies to present a more unified and widespread voice on these kinds of things.
Finally then, Dr. Grobin, can Christian parents vaccinate their children and be assured that the vaccine wasn't derived from aborted fetal tissue?
Yeah, there are definitely ways to find out which vaccines use these cell lines and which don't. It can be a little bit cumbersome. There is a page at the FDA website titled Vaccines Licensed for Use in the United States. So somebody Googled that, Vaccines Licensed for Use in the United States, and it takes them to an FDA web page with that title. There are listed on that page all of the vaccines that are licensed for use in the United States. Each vaccine could be clicked on, and it can go to an information page. And then on each vaccine's information page, you can further click on package descriptions or package inserts. And that would basically be the actual pamphlet that is included in the vaccine packet. And that pamphlet will list ingredients. You know, if it says MRC5 or WI38, then that would include that fetal cell line. Usually those ingredients can be found in a heading called description. So again, from that vaccine's license for use in the United States page on the FDA site, people can examine the package inserts for each vaccine. But very briefly, I mean, I can just say that for childhood vaccinations, varicella, that is chickenpox, hepatitis A, MMR, MMRV, all types of MMR, those all use either the WI38 or the MRC5 cell strain. And there are some DTaP and Hib vaccines that use it as well. The Pentacell and the Quadracell brands use these cell lines. And then there are some other vaccines for adults that use these too. Some of the shingles vaccines, some of the adenovirus vaccines. So it can get a little complicated. It can get a little complex, but those are some ways that parents can look into this. Also, again, I mean, I think they can band together. They can do a little searching on the internet. You know, there are pages that talk about these kinds of issues where they can find more information as well. And ask their providers. I mean, ask their doctors. Their doctors may not even know, but again, by asking them, by raising that question, it helps to raise the public awareness. It work against that sort of social consensus that I was talking about earlier that just sort of accepts these kinds of things.
Dr. Gifford Grobin is Associate Professor of Systematic Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, As Long as Vaccines Are Tied to Abortion, Christians Need Exemptions. You can read it on the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Grobin, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd. It's been my pleasure to be with you.
Pastor Paul McCain is with us on the other side of the break. Our series on the Lutheran Confessions, as we're in the Solid Declaration of the Formula of Concord, continues. We'll be talking about the Lord's Supper again, part two with him, beginning with the Reformer's fixation on the words of institution.
Despair says nobody cares, and that's not true.
Dr. Christian Kincaid, author of the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for May, Living with Grief, Bound by Sorrow, Wrapped in Comfort.
And despair says there's no hope for me, and that's not true. To despair is not of God.
Learn more about living with grief at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040.
In many ways, St. Matthew Lutheran Church in Bel Air, Maryland is just like any other Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod Church. They have worship services each Sunday and reach out to their community, but one thing they don't do is pay their electric bill. Hello, this is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. And if you want to hear what St. Matthew actually did to eliminate their electric bill, just visit interesttime.org. That's interesttime.org.
I'm delighted to be chairman of Preach the Word Project, a project of our Synod to strengthen the preaching of all of us pastors in the Synod. We know how eternally important that is.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Carl Fekencher talking about the new Preach the Word Project.
So we've put together a program of 12 modules that will be coming out this year and over the next 3 years on a variety of preaching topics for pastors to do together with two other pastors, two guys they trust, two guys they feel comfortable with, written materials and very fine video quality materials that are now becoming available.
Preach the Word helps pastors work together to improve their preaching with several resources and by interacting with seminary professors and fellow preachers. Find out more at lcms.org/preachtheword. lcms.org/preachtheword. Preaching is challenging business. We all can use some fresh ideas. lcms.org/preachtheword.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're looking for a good Lutheran church in Scarsdale, New York, one that has sound teaching based on the Word of God and takes pride in the confessions, look no further than Trinity Lutheran Church in Scarsdale, New York, where every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. we have Bible study and Sunday school, followed by the service at 10. Again, good liturgical confessional worship by the grace of God. Find us at trinityscarsdale.org.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue our romp through Romans. Abraham, father of faith, promise guaranteed, peace through faith, reconciled while enemies, and death in Adam, life in Christ. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.